This is Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, our monthly performing arts program devoted to Iowa's not-for-profit arts and cultural organizations. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. Welcome to our August Road Trip Edition. We'll be driving by the Salisbury House in Des Moines to chat with the director of marketing, Katie Wingert, and the co-chair of their Concours d'Elegance, David Baum, about their annual celebration of the art and design of the automobile. We'll head to Decorah to learn about Luther College's composer-in-residence, Brooke Joyce's unusual installation of a symphony called Talking Trees, utilizing the sounds of nature. We'll be swinging by Iowa State Center Stevens Auditorium to speak with their general manager, Mark North, and their outreach coordinator, Sarah Compton, about their exciting 2013-14 lineup. And we'll cruise to the Cedar Valley to catch a preview of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony's upcoming season with our music director and conductor, Jason Weinberger. That's all ahead on Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase.
People are more and more and more aware of what the Salisbury House is. And it is a classy event. We want to keep it classy, to keep it at the same level as this great castle here in the Midwest. It has everything from the art, the books, the automobiles, the flower gardens of the grounds, the house construction. It really is a very exciting venue. We were dubbed early on as the Pebble Beach of the Midwest, and the Pebble Beach and a couple other concourses are the world's top events, so we were flattered by that. But we didn't sit on our laurels. We each year want to change it and make it fresh and continue on.
You know, whether you think you're a car lover or not, really it is something to behold to see 100-plus vehicles displayed on the Salisbury House grounds. If you like art, we'll have that. So really, there's something for everyone. This committee does an amazing job recruiting cars from, I think we had 14 states and a Canadian exhibitor last year. So it really is drawing people from all over with their unique vehicles. We're so grateful that we've got these 30 or so gentlemen who are so passionate about automotive art and that they share it here with Salisbury House. So we hope that people come. It's grown every year and it's a unique event and it's a lot of fun too.
Salisbury's Director of Marketing, Katie Wingert, and the co-chair of their Concours d'Elegance, David Baum, discussing Salisbury's celebration of the art and design of the automobile. Salisbury's Automobile Classic was created in 2000, showcasing around 35 vehicles. This year marks their 14th celebration, with a collection boasting over 120 vintage autos and 30 motorcycles. Salisbury added the Heartland Driving Tour on Saturday, September 7th, along with their famous annual dinner and dancing fundraiser called the Gatsby Gala, held on Saturday evening at the mansion. Don't let the fancy title fool you. As Katie and David will tell you, it's a family event. But David says it didn't initially start out that way.
It was a guy thing. There is a lot of passion from the guys that are on the committee, and we've had several ladies over the years. Katie, being the director of marketing, has been intimately involved with this event now for the third year. And they kind of all get attached to it. The other thing that we've done with the show is we make it for a family event. We just aren't looking to attract the guys. We do things for the ladies, for the kids. We have kids judging, kids coloring. You know, we have the fabulous art exhibits and the collection of books at the Salisbury House. And this year is really our second year doing art.
And this year we're adding a juried art exhibit. So it's drawings, paintings, and photographs of art inspired by automobiles. So I think we've ended up with about 40 pieces that'll be on display, and the art will remain on display through the Concours weekend. And it's artists from coast to coast, because the Concours event, as it has evolved, is really to celebrate the art and design of the automobile. So this is just another component that we thought kind of fleshed out that concept.
And is this in the mansion itself then?
It is. It's in the historic garage, which it's one of the nicest quote-unquote garages that you'll find. But it's, you know, got the exposed brick walls and it's got ceilings that Carl Weeks had made out of shipping crates. And then it's got big glass doors, and it's a really charming area where the exhibit will be set up.
Well, David, tell us about these cars, and why would you consider them a work of art?
Automobiles have kind of been a rolling sculpture. I mean, they personalize an individual or a group of individuals that have designed sheet metal, and all of the jewelry, which are everything from hood ornaments to the knobs on the dash to door handles and everything. And over the years, they've been preserved and restored. Some are original, but most of them have restoration at some degree on them, and quite a few of them, a lot of dollars have been put into them. But they are rolling works of art. Back in the days of the 20s and the 30s and coming up through that era, you could select any color you wanted. So as these cars have been restored, we had a gentleman that had a total collection of Hudsons. And growing up as a kid, I didn't remember Hudsons as being very appealing vehicles. And once we saw his collection and some that he's brought to the show, which have been People's Choice Award winners as well as just top-notch, just walked away with everything. We've used it as a cover on programs. The color, the combination, the jewelry, you'd think they were Duesenbergs, just top shelf. And when you see some of these vehicles that come in here that are a Studebaker or a Hudson, and it sits alongside of Packards and Cadillacs and cars of that era that were the luxury mark, it's just amazing. And just like the paintings, they truly are just beautiful works of art, because even though they weren't one-off production vehicles, as they've been restored and as the person that put it together this time has viewed it in color and chrome and brass and nickel, it truly is just a beautiful piece of art.
What are some of the different categories?
The categories this year are going to have the antique class. And the antique class is primarily the Model Ts, the brass and nickel era up through 1920. Another class we'll have is the collectible class. Collectibles are the 1923 through the 62 vehicles. It's kind of our catch-all class if it doesn't fit one of the specifics, but it's a car that we definitely want to show and be seen, then we'll put it in the collectibles class. Another class this year is the Jaguars. Jaguar has quite a heritage, from the early days of motorcycles to race cars and even right up to the new 2014 F-Type that follows the E-Type that they came out with in the 60s. That's going to be an exciting class for us. Lincolns, top mark, Cadillac Lincoln were synonymous through the early days as luxury vehicles. Salisbury class is that era when the Weeks lived there. You know, and that was the 23 through 53. And they drove Packards, they drove Cadillacs, but it could be anything that's kind of in that era. You know, it might be a Peerless, it could be a Cord. So it's a class that it fits pretty much what we think the Weeks might have had. Station wagons, this is a unique class. We've been real fortunate in finding some beautiful station wagons. So there's a lot of people that'll be able to relive maybe their childhood or their memories will be seasoned again as far as see those types of vehicles. And we'll have possibly some motorcycles. The last 2 years, we've had two large groups of vintage motorcycles, and it proved to be a very popular class. And the last class that we're going to have is Wings to Wheels. And these are airplane manufacturers that went in to produce automobiles. And maybe just like bicycle manufacturers started producing vehicles, wagon manufacturers went into the horseless carriage production. So we're hopeful that we can get at least a sampling of some Wings to Wheels vehicles in here this year too.
How does one go about getting tickets and getting involved in this?
People are welcome to purchase tickets in advance on our website, which is salisburyhouse.org. Or guests are welcome to come just to the gate the day of the event. We're open on Sunday, September 8th from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. And we have extra parking at Des Moines University, and we'll provide shuttle transportation from Des Moines University to the house because we've got the buses and the streets right around Salisbury House are closed so that we can accommodate the shuttle bus. So we have just a great event that day. There's food service on site, bottled water, things like that. So it's a fun, festive atmosphere, and people are welcome to come and spend the whole day or an hour or as much time as they'd like the day of the event. And the house is open for tours during the event. You know, really, we try and showcase the vehicles, but also the house and the art exhibit will be open that day as well. Potentially, we may have some speakers, car-related themes, talking within the house that day too. So there's a lot to do that day, and it's just a really fun and lively environment, and it's stunning to see the cars on the grounds of Salisbury House. You know, not being the automotive aficionado when I started, once I saw it all come together my first year at Salisbury House, it's gorgeous.
Salisbury Director of Marketing Katie Wingert and the co-chair of their Concours d'Elegance Committee, David Baum. To learn more about the 2013 Salisbury Concours d'Elegance, a celebration of the art and design of the automobile, and to see the rolling sculptures between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. on September 8th at the Salisbury Estate in Des Moines, please go to salisburyhouse.org. Also, on Sunday evening, September 8th, at another Iowa mansion in Cedar Rapids, Orchestra Iowa will be presenting their outdoor Bruce Moore Orchestra concert on the front lawn of Bruce Moore. The program starts at 7 p.m. with gates opening at 5:30. For more details and tickets, please go to orchestraiowa.org. Tickets will also be available at the Bruce Moore Gate. Don't go away. We'll ponder society and how it relates to a unique sabbatical project called Talking Trees, composed by Luther College's composer in residence. We'll scope out Iowa State Center Stevens Auditorium's exciting 2013-14 Performing Arts and Educational Series. And we'll hear what the music director and conductor of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony has to say about their new season. You're listening to the Iowa Arts Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
If you think about musicians in a concert hall, the expectation is when you are in the audience that you are listening to those musicians. Your mind might wander, and it does for all of us most of the time, but you know, you're not supposed to be reading or texting or talking with your neighbor. And usually you try and tune out the sort of annoying ambient sounds around you. So when someone unwraps a piece of candy and cellophane, you don't think about that as part of the music. You actually try and block that out, you know, because you want to be respectful to the people on stage and you want to give them your full attention. Our piece really is not that at all. If people come and listen to Talking Trees and say, you know what, I don't like those sounds, but I really like the sounds of the wind rustling through the trees, then I think we've actually done our job. And so in a way, you know, we want people to enjoy our sounds for sure, and we want that to be part of the experience. But as artists, you know, actually what we want people to do is simply listen. In no way would I ever suggest that I could create a sound as beautiful as some of the bird songs that I've heard out at Seed Savers. I would never even approach that. But if what we can do is simply get people to open up their ears a little bit, maybe close their eyes and linger on a sound and focus on it and sort of put away whatever other distractions may be around them, then I think we've done something valuable.
Brooke Joyce, Luther College's composer in residence, discussing his latest project called Talking Trees. This is the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. Brooke studied composition with Alan Gimbel at Lawrence University in Wisconsin. He received his master's at the Cleveland Institute of Music, where he studied composition with Donald Erb, and he completed his PhD at Princeton. 1 year later, he came to Luther. According to Brooke, the Talking Trees project evolved with an idea from someone he met at a summer music festival.
One of the things that serious young composers do in the summertime is they go to summer music festivals. It's an important way to meet other composers and see what they're doing and hear their music, and also to connect with other teachers. And at the time, I had already decided that I was going to be going to Princeton for my graduate work, but I was accepted into this program called June in Buffalo, which has become sort of an important stopping place for a lot of young musicians. And that summer, one of the masterclass teachers was Harvey Sulberger. And I knew who he was. He's sort of an iconic figure in contemporary American music. He's a terrific composer. He's a wonderful teacher. He's a brilliant conductor. And he's a wonderful virtuoso flute player. And my experience with him in this masterclass was very positive. And then lo and behold, fast forward to 2009, I was at a concert that the Iowa Composers Forum had sponsored in Cedar Rapids. And there was Harvey, not there as a composer, but as a performer, performing a solo flute work. And, you know, I kind of reintroduced myself to him, and we sort of chatted after this concert, and he told me that he was about to retire from the university where he was teaching, and he and his wife decided to move to Strawberry Point, of all places, this little town in eastern Iowa. And he said, you know, I've always wanted to do an outdoor sound installation, which surprised me because this is outside of what Harvey normally does. He is a pencil and paper composer. But the last school where he taught, the University of California at San Diego, is a real kind of experimental music school. They have a big program in contemporary music. And so I think some of his experiences there led him to sort of develop this interest in working with technology and in sort of doing music in a non-traditional space, like out of doors. And then a few years later, this is now 2011, I was given this opportunity to apply for a sabbatical at Luther. And I remembered my conversation with Harvey, and I thought, this would be a great project because this is also something that I'm interested in. And so that's kind of the backstory to this project.
And then you reconnected with him.
Yeah. And I mentioned this idea, and he had not sort of moved forward on it. And so I said, well, would you like to work together on something? And he was excited about that. So we settled on doing a project at Seed Savers, which is a heritage farm north of Decorah that has these beautiful trails. And it's kind of a funny story. I just said, you know what? Why don't we just drive out to Seed Savers, which would be a great place for this project? We did. We connected with a woman there who's in charge of public programming named Shannon Carmody. We just pitched the idea, and right away she says, yeah, sounds great. And I said, don't you need some supervisor approval, or does this need to go before a board? And she said, nope, this is part of our mission, and we really want more people to get out on our trails. So that's been a really nice collaboration, is working with this other organization. And, you know, Seed Savers is known around the world for the work that they do in collecting these heirloom plants and seeds. And so that's been really interesting to get to know a little bit.
And you also worked with some other folks besides Harvey. Just tell us briefly about some of these other people that are involved.
Harvey and I both realized early on that we were going to be pretty far outside our comfort zones with this project, and that we needed as many people to help us as we could. And so there's a local artist who lives in Decorah named Kelly Ludeking. He's the one who designed these steel tripods that hold the speakers for the installation. He designed and built them. And then we had several people help us with the sort of technology aspects. A computer programmer named Steve Smith, who's also a composition colleague of mine at Luther. And then we had someone help us with actually building the electronics that needed to be built and put together. And then we also had a consultant that helped us with solar power. Since this is out of doors and in a location that doesn't have any electricity nearby, we needed to either use batteries or solar power or some combination of the two, which is what we ended up doing. So there are lots of things that are kind of coming together on this project that, you know, no one person probably would have the knowledge to do all of them. At least that's not me.
I guess I jumped ahead here because after you went to Seed Savers and they said, terrific, but then you realized that you'd have to have money to make this happen.
And right.
You had a lot of different areas that you had to go out and build this as you went along.
Yeah. We were fortunate to, you know, make the decision to do this project and to do it at Seed Savers About a month before the deadline for an Iowa Arts Council funding cycle. And the people at the Iowa Arts Council were very, very helpful in suggesting to us a way to sort of frame the proposal. And one of the things that they suggested to us was that this really isn't an individual artist grant. This really is a work of public art. And that sort of got us thinking differently about the piece. But it also tied into one of our goals, which was to bring our music and our ideas to all kinds of people. And so we thought, you know, someone who makes the effort to go walk on a trail because they enjoy the outdoors, they enjoy being in nature, they enjoy the beauty of nature, someone like that is probably going to be receptive to hearing some sounds that are created by people that also share some of those interests. And so thinking about our project as a kind of a public work of art really kind of changed our direction and gave us a way to think about the piece that was pretty exciting.
Once the mechanical pieces had been designated, Brooke and Harvey hiked the 900-acre Seed Saver site, collecting and selecting the audio they would use for their work.
Basically, what we discovered was that the sounds fell into four basic categories. There were frogs, insects, birds, and water. And those became the themes, if you will, for the piece. So there are four tripods, and each one plays a version of those sound sources that we recorded. So there is a frogs tripod that uses only the sounds of frogs to do what it does.
And you had some interesting discoveries with these different sounds or audio that you got from these different sources.
Yes, and you know, I am not even an amateur biologist. I'm a novice when it comes to kind of environmental science. But, you know, I've always wondered and sort of suspected, as I think a lot of people do, that, you know, when you have an ecosystem, these creatures that you encounter, that you observe, are communicating with one another in some way. And of course, they do at a very basic level. But what was really interesting was to discover, for example, that the fly that kept buzzing around us as we were wandering through part of the property was buzzing right around the pitch C. And it was also wonderful to discover that the frogs that were croaking in the pond near that area were also croaking right around the pitch C. And there was a bird whose call was sort of an ascending scale. And that scale ended close to the pitch C. Maybe it's a coincidence, but I don't know. It sort of feels like Seed Savers has a key. It's in the key of C, for better or for worse. And that was something that we took advantage of when we designed the audio itself, as we sort of were able to focus the sounds. And so you hear that pitch emerge, which is something that we weren't anticipating, but that's what happens when you work with found sounds, is you can kind of put them under a microscope and see what's there and use that as material, use that as inspiration.
How did you go about putting this together or making this into what you wanted it to be?
A lot of the research into the technology and whatnot, that happened in the fall of 2012, and it was really in the spring of 2013 where the musical sounds themselves were sort of, you know, we worked with them, we manipulated them, we came up with the actual sonic environment that you hear. And then I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to program this little microcomputer. And then it was a matter of simply putting everything together and, you know, hoping that the planning that we had done was going to be sufficient to make the piece work. And as it turns out, we mostly made the right decisions. You know, the structures were the right height for people to walk around them if they wanted or to walk through them. The sounds, we were able to control the volume so that, you know, you can hear the sounds when you're near them, but you can also hear the environment around you. In other words, the goal was not to sort of bombard people with these sounds that we've placed out in this beautiful farm, but simply to enhance and color the environment. And based on what people shared with us in our guest book, I think that's what we were able to do. And it's sort of an interesting thing that we sort of discovered early on, and that is our goal in this was simply to get people to listen to the environment. And if our sounds were sort of a catalyst for doing that, that's wonderful. In fact, someone wrote in our guest book, you know, I much prefer the sounds of water and birds by themselves. And I said, exactly. We're not trying to compete. We're simply trying to get people to pay attention and to listen. Harvey and I both feel that, you know, we've become increasingly a visually oriented society. And especially now when you notice people my age and younger are sort of tied to these electronic devices and people are constantly looking at them and looking at information and watching videos and taking pictures. But there's this whole sonic world that we're surrounded by as well that is rich and inspiring and can touch us in unexpected ways. And especially when you're outdoors in Iowa in the summer, I mean, this is such a magnificent place to be that if we simply were able to make people aware of that, then I think we sort of did what we wanted to do.
Brooke Joyce, Luther College's composer in residence. Brooke Joyce and collaborator Harvey Solberger will be doing another Talking Trees installation starting on Monday, August 26th, located along one of the walking paths in the quad in the center of the Luther College campus in Decorah. Brooke and Harvey will be capturing new audio collected on the Luther campus for this project. The installation will be open every day from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. for at least 2 weeks or longer. Brooke thinks you can enjoy Talking Trees for 10 minutes or 12 hours. He says kids and families love it. The pod structures are fun, and you can even put your ear on it or stand on it. For more details about the Talking Trees project created by Brooke Joyce and Harvey Solberger, please visit Brooke's website at brookjoyce.com. You're listening to the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
The Performing Arts Series at Stevens Auditorium this coming year is full of, I think, great performers and performances. You know, we're kicking the year off with one of the great comedians of all time, Bill Cosby, one show only. Tickets are, you know, already on sale. And we'll go on public sale with what we have left in September. And you know, people should get out there and get those tickets before they are gone. We have a great musical lineup. We've got a couple of great orchestras and a soloist who a couple of years ago was one of our young concert artists who did a week's worth of residencies and just a very good cellist. Wynton Marsalis, 10 tenors. And then for the bluegrass fans, we've got Bella Fleck, Abigail Washburn, and Del McCurry. They'll each perform separate sets, and at some point during the evening, they'll all be on stage at the same time, and I think it'll just be an exciting evening.
Mark North, Iowa State Center Stevens Auditorium's general manager. Mark, along with the center's outreach coordinator, Sarah Compton, are excited about this year's amazing performing arts series, including an appearance by the Australian Chamber Orchestra on March 24th.
The Australian Chamber Orchestra, they ended our season 1 year. They're just a very phenomenal ensemble. They enjoy what they're doing. They really are engaged in helping to promote classical music. And they're just a very engaging group, and they're very talented. They're young and very vibrant, and people enjoyed them the last time, and I'm sure they will enjoy the program again this time.
And they're bringing a piano soloist with them as well. It's a great show.
It is. Yeah. And they perform standing up, and you know, people will just love them.
Well, let's talk a little bit more then, too, about your Estonian National Symphony Orchestra. And I thought that cellist's name looked familiar, and then here he is again. So
Narek Hakhnazarian.
And that's going to be a fantastic concert as well.
It is. And Narek was here 3 years ago, is it, Sarah?
Two years is all.
Mm-hmm. And did a week-long residency, and I mean, he was just received very well, and you know, the young man is just a talented cellist.
He's a wonderful, wonderful individual. We just fell in love with him, and Tchaikovsky winner, and just he's fab.
Well, it's terrific that you're going to have two such fine orchestras on your series. That's really wonderful.
Well, it's one of the things that does set, you know, our series apart. We, I think, are really the only presenter in the state of Iowa that annually will have international orchestras as part of our series. Part of that goes back to the Ames International Orchestra Festival Association and the opening of C.Y. Stevens back in 1969 with those five performances by the New York Philharmonic, conducted by Ozawa. So it's just a tradition that we, you know, continue.
Well, you're having a different kind of orchestra hit the stage, which sounds like it's going to be great fun as well.
I think it's going to be a fun show. It's ukulele music, and they do everything from the classics to pop and everything in between. They also encourage people to bring their ukuleles to the show, and there will be audience participation. It's just going to be a fun evening.
Ukulele seems to be, you know, really coming back.
Well, and part of our CY Kids Club, this is one of the shows on as part of that program, and what Sarah was able to find were some inexpensive ukuleles online, so anybody who participates in our Children's Kids Club is going to get a free ukulele.
We're going to learn to play the ukulele before the show, so...
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Now, tell us a little bit about these tenors from Australia.
The 10 tenors, they're young with great voices, and their program this year is the 10 tenors on Broadway. So they're going to do renditions of Broadway music, and they're just a very dynamic. And again, this is one of those shows where you just come, you sit back, you listen, you enjoy, and you know, you hop to your feet and applaud at the end.
Speaking of Broadway, tell us about some of the musicals that you're bringing to the C.Y. Stevens.
I think our Broadway lineup this year is really good. We have Memphis, which is October 24th. We've got Beauty and the Beast. We're bringing back Mamma Mia again. We've also have Bring It On, the musical, which was just up for a Tony Award for Best Choreography. Unfortunately, it was not the winner, but it did receive the recognition for its choreography. And kicking off the season with Memphis, I think, is just a great show. It's actually based on some actual events in Memphis back in the 1950s with a white DJ who began playing African-American rock and soul music on his station. So that's the part that begins this story, and you know, they weave in the story of a young black female singer who, you know, is trying to get her big break and become a star as well. And it has great music, great choreography, and it's just a very enjoyable show. And I think it's one of those subjects that just is timeless. So young or old, you're going to enjoy that show as well.
And then you have some other sort of quirky one.
Oh yes, the Addams Family in January. This will be the first time it's played in the state of Iowa, and it has all the Addams Family characters: Lurch, Morticia, Gomez, Pugsley, Grandmama, and Wendy. You know, it's really a story about Wendy, who's fallen in love with a normal young man, and this is all about getting the parents together and meeting for the first time, and Wendy confiding in Gomez and Gomez keeping secrets from Morticia. So it'll be a fun show.
And then you have a Disney presentation and a standard.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast, it's a great show. Great costuming, great music, great choreography. It has Disney behind it, so you know it has very definite standards. And it is on a weeknight this year, but people should take note that it is a special start time, 6:30. So, you know, families can come out, see the show, get home in time to, you know, get the kids to bed and up for school the next day. And, you know, even the adults will like this because, you know, the songs are just very memorable and people like the show.
And speaking of memorable songs, how about your ABBA tribute?
We've done ABBA almost 3 years
in a row.
We did Mamma Mia, I think, 3 years ago. And this year we're bringing the musical Mamma Mia back to conclude our season. And if you like the ABBA music, just one of those feel-good shows. And, you know, that's why people keep coming back to see it. They sing along with the tunes. And, again, I think it's one of those years where all of the shows we have are just going to be entertaining and people are going to love them.
Well, tell us about some of these other special things that you have happening. You call it your esteemed artists. Tell us about some of those folks.
Jazz at Lincoln Center with Wynton Marsalis is coming back in March of 14. The last time they were here, they sold the building out, and they're going to be doing a lot of selections from the Blue Note Records catalog, along with John Coltrane, you know, and other jazz greats. If you're a fan of big band jazz, you know, this is the show for you. And these guys are just great musicians by themselves. And when you put them together as an ensemble, they just get up there, they jam, they have fun, and they'll rock the building and get people clapping along, and just a great night of music.
And you're going to bring in the Moscow Festival Ballet as well.
Right. This year we're doing Cinderella. That's in January, and their dancers are talented. They're from Russia, and you know it's the original score. It is taped music. It is not a live orchestra that's playing along with them. But the sets and the costumes, they're all first rate, and we're just so glad to have them back.
And you have some Masters of the Fiddle. Tell us about that performance.
Yeah, husband and wife, Donnell Leahy and Natalie McMaster, have this project called Masters of the Fiddle, and they'll come in and they play original and classic Celtic music. They'll also have dancing along with that, and each of them by themselves are just world-class fiddle players, and together they'll play everything from the ballads to, you know, step music to everything in between, and we're just looking forward to having that. And it's not often that you will get artists of that caliber touring together, especially husbands and wives. They tend to have their own projects, and they can come together and do a combined project and collaborate with each other. Sometimes there's just this magic on stage that you just can't reproduce anywhere else.
Tell us about these flute players that you're having come as well.
I'm going to turn that one over to Sarah.
They're actually Iowa-based. We typically have a young concert artist or artist in residence. I was talking to Sonia Giles, our flautist, and she said, oh, in stereo, they are amazing. So we're bringing them here for the week. They'll be doing residency activities, and then they'll end the residency with a recital in the Marthell and Tye Recital Hall on campus on November 1st.
Let's dive in and talk about the educational programs and some of the things that you have.
For me, as an outreach coordinator, the focus really is about making the arts fun and educational for all ages. So we start at the ground and go up, so to speak. And so we have things for everyone from pre-kindergarten right on up through adults. But for our youth matinee series, we have a show about the Three Little Pigs. Who doesn't love the story of the Three Little Pigs? It's so fun to see the kids come into Stevens and get excited, and you can just practically see and hear the wheels turning while they're watching those familiar stories unfold on stage, because the creative juices are really flowing there. We have Five Little Monkeys. We're 3 to 5. And we have A Monster Who Ate My Peas, which is a fun early childhood story. We have a show about Laura Ingalls Wilder and that classic piece of literature. We really try to focus on a lot of early student literature, which also we have a show about Johnny Appleseed and Junie B. Jones, which is another early reader favorite. We have a show about the Civil War called 4 Score and 7 Years Ago. We have a performance by the Iowa State Symphony Orchestra, and that'll be followed by what we call a petting zoo. After the performance, some of the members of the orchestra go out into the lobby areas, and they work with the kids, whoever wants to stay after the show, to really get up close to the instruments. And for our older students, we have a performance by the American Place Theater of The Kite Runner, which is a one-man performance, but it's an interpretive performance about that important piece of literature that many high school students read and college students read. So that's our educational series in a nutshell.
And you also, in conjunction, have this kids club, which is kind of cool. Tell us a little bit about that.
And the kids club is in conjunction with the performing arts series, and it's open to any student 12 years of age or younger. And kids come with their parents, and we do activities either before or after the show. Sometimes we meet with the cast. Sometimes, well, as Mark already talked about, we'll get to play the ukulele before the ukulele orchestra. So the kids will really kind of know, oh, how hard it is to do that, or, oh, I can do that, and those kinds of things. This year they get to go to Masters of the Fiddle, which the last time Natalie McMaster was here, just she blew everybody away. And they'll get to come to Cinderella, and we'll learn about how to wear toe shoes and how to be a ballerina, so, and some of the things involved in ballet. And then they'll get to choose either Beauty and the Beast or Bring It On.
Really great lineup on both venues.
I think one other important program that Sarah is involved with is our onstage program. If you'd want to talk a little bit about that, Sarah, that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. It started actually, Wendy Winterstein, a playwright in New York City, was dismayed that kids didn't know what was going on Broadway. Here it was, they were in New York and they didn't know what was in their own backyard. And she started a program whereby she would bring kids to the show and they'd talk about it at a coffee house afterwards. And we kind of adapted that a little bit to our local situation and try to share shows with high school students that they might not otherwise choose. And students write essays saying why they want to be in the program. They come to the show, they meet with the cast afterwards and talk about the show. We talk about what that is, what's all involved in the performance, and then they write an essay after that. And one culminating paper at the end of the year, they actually receive English credit for this that's recognized by their high schools and state institutions. So it's really a fascinating program, and then they get to come to all different kinds of things. So we bring them to a Broadway musical, we bring them to the symphony, typically they get to come to a straight play or comedy, they get a little jazz, a little dance, really explore the arts. And so it's fun to watch where they go with that, and we try to keep in touch a little bit and see where that takes them afterwards as they go out into the world and grow. And it's been a wonderful program for us. And I can't go anywhere without also mentioning that we do sponsor an award at the Metropolitan Opera Auditions for the Iowa District. And opera has been a very important part of our musical scene in Iowa. We're very proud of the Des Moines Metro Opera, and we're very proud of our relationship with the Metropolitan Opera National Council Auditions. So those take place a second Saturday in January. And at the Iowa State Center, we facilitate that with help from the music department and a small committee, an army of volunteers. And it's a fabulous free opportunity to hear all the great favorite arias that you ever want to hear with people who may well go on to do marvelous things on stages around the world.
Iowa State Center Stevens Auditorium's outreach coordinator, Sarah Compton, along with Mark North, the center's general manager. Comedian Bill Cosby opens their season on October 18th. To find out details about their performing arts and educational offerings, including their 34th annual presentation of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker, and information about young dancer auditions, please go to their website at center.iastate.edu. Just ahead, the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony's music director, conductor, and CEO, Jason Weinberger, fills us in on their enticing season ahead. You're listening to the Iowa Arts Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
Excited about the season for a variety of reasons. Obviously, the concerts are exciting and quite varied, actually. We have a tremendous range of music and soloists, so there's really just going to be an amazing range of experience for people who come to our concerts. And, of course, also we're going to be out in the community a little bit more than we have in the past. That's very exciting to us, and that's something we've been focusing on. So have a chance to be at some venues that are new to us and maybe new to some of our audience members, and spend a little bit more time with some of our big events over in Waterloo, which, you know, we haven't been able to do as much in recent years. And this season we're rolling out a whole new logo and a new look for the symphony, and that's also going to come with the beginning of the concert season. So it's kind of it's been a busy summer as a result getting ready for all these changes, but at the same time we're really excited to finally get going on the concerts and get our new look out there for people to get excited about. So we're raring to go. We can't wait for things to get started soon here around the corner in the month of September.
Music director and conductor of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony, Jason Weinberger. You're listening to the Iowa Arts Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum. Jason dives in to talk about their new season.
In September, we're going to be giving a concert at the River Loop Amphitheater, which is located down in downtown Waterloo on the riverfront next door to the Waterloo Center for the Arts. It's a beautiful setting, and we're going to be performing Dvorak's New World Symphony. So we're very excited to perform that piece in particular. Obviously, it has a lot of meaning for Iowans because of Dvorak's time here, but also just a beautiful setting. It's really, I think, going to be wonderful, especially that time of year. People can really enjoy themselves.
Tell us about your opening gala.
Well, this year we are having a big opening gala concert at the Gallagher Blue Door, and kind of the kickoff to our main event series. This event will actually feature a whole evening's worth of stuff. The concert itself is going to be quite spectacular. The concert features a wonderful piece by Beethoven that's almost never performed. It's called Wellington's Victory. We actually won't do the entire piece. We're going to do one of the two large sections. But this piece, you know, in addition to being sort of unusual in the repertoire, is also the thematic kind of keynote for this program, because Wellington's Victory, Beethoven originally wrote this for a musical machine, not for an orchestra. And then all the rest of the pieces on this program have some very strong connection to machines or machine-like activity. And then we move on into a contemporary American piece from the Beethoven by John Adams. And the piece we're doing is called Century Rolls. And it's inspired by kind of the history of some piano music in the 20th century, particularly jazz and ragtime, and actually specifically inspired by piano rolls. And an Iowa native named Connor Hannock is going to return to the state to perform with us. And Connor is originally from Iowa City, from a very musical family, and he is gaining quite a reputation for himself for performing contemporary American music. So really an authority in this area and someone we're thrilled to have. On the second half of the program, we'll be performing a piece by Steve Reich called New York Counterpoint, which really takes in a lot of the human-built, the very busy machine-like elements of New York City. It's a very interesting piece for one clarinet with a recording of a clarinet ensemble. So it's clarinet with electronics. And again, there's that machine theme. And then finally, we finished the concert with Bolero, which is not inspired by machine itself, but is a very machine-like piece of music, the same beat over and over again. And it features our musicians.
Tell us about your special event.
We have a big special event at the end of October. We're going to be featuring Brandi Carlile, singer-songwriter and folk and rock artist who has been here before a couple of years ago. This time she's coming back. She's doing the entire show. It's also going to be an acoustic show, meaning she and the two twins who play bass and guitar and do all the backup vocals, it's just the three of them. There's no drum set. There's no extra large instruments or anything like that. And the orchestra, and it's got a different vibe in this acoustic setting.
Very exciting to have her on the Gallagher stage. Well, tell us about what you're going to be doing in November. This is really unique.
This program in November on the 10th is a celebration of Kristallnacht, which is seeing a significant anniversary this year. Kristallnacht is also known as the Night of Broken Glass, and it was a historical event in Germany right on the eve of the beginning of the Holocaust and you know, the beginning of the Second World War. Jewish businesses in many, many cities were targeted, and many had their front window panes broken, along with other violence that was committed against Jewish communities. So that's how this occurrence got its name, and it really marked the most public beginning of what would become the Holocaust. Co-producing partners on this are the Symphony and Gallagher Blue Dorn artist series, and then we're also collaborating with Cedar Valley Chamber Music will be featured, UNI theater students. There's a large youth choir comprised of students from Waterloo and from Waverly Shell Rock. Of course, Met Chorale. It's a community-wide sort of collaboration, and I think it's going to be very powerful. We are featuring a really important large piece by Stephen Paulus. We'll also be doing a work by Shostakovich, a chamber symphony, which is a transcription of his 8th string quartet. And it was kind of Shostakovich's own response to the events of the Holocaust. So we're going to be, in a way, as artists and as audience members, experiencing many of these events through the eyes of artists who have different relationships with the historical events. And I think that is such a unique and interesting lens through which to view these kinds of past events. There's so much that'll probably come out of this concert that I can't even anticipate, but I just know it's going to be a very powerful afternoon.
Tell us about this soiree in February.
We are again returning to Waterloo in February, and this time also to a venue which is not new, but is going to be new to almost everybody who goes into it. There's a ballroom downtown Waterloo. It's called the Brown Derby. It was actually the original home of the Elks Club in Waterloo. So what we decided to do was a really imaginative presentation of Mozart's music to try and recreate, in a smaller way, the experience of going to a concert in Mozart's lifetime. Concerts at that time were very different. There was no conductor. Mozart frequently led whatever the music was from the keyboard or, you know, sometimes from the violin. So that's what this concert's all about. And we have a wonderful singer coming up to join us, and her name is Suzanne Lommler. Really great singer. She's sung with a couple other orchestras around the state already. And she's going to sing one aria from Marriage of Figaro, but also an aria that is really great that a lot of people haven't heard, from La Clemenza di Tito, which is for voice and solo clarinet and ensemble. So I'll be playing clarinet. In fact, I'll be leading this concert from the clarinet, kind of in imitation of what Mozart did, and also just to switch up the experience a little bit. This should be a lot of fun, and I think people will really enjoy seeing that venue.
And plus, you're doing Mozart's Symphony No. 40, which is marvelous.
Yeah,
well.
I left out the most popular piece. It's an incredible work. We will be doing the second version of Mozart 40, which is the one that features clarinets, and maybe people might be able to guess that from the fact that I'm leading the piece from the clarinet.
Well, this is going to be a lot of fun, and in fact, you're going to be bringing in a cutting-edge violist, and is this going to be more of a chamber concert in March?
In some ways, it is. We're hosting Nadia Sirota, who is a really amazing musician and person. She's very well known as a performer, particularly commissioning works for herself to play, and she's worked with many of today's leading composers. She's also a radio host, in particular doing a lot of internet radio, and has won a big award for her hosting of a new music radio program on WQXR in New York. And then she also plays in an outfit that is a hybrid between a rock band and a new music classical group. So what we're going to do is try and highlight her talents and her skills in this concert. So one of the pieces we're performing is for her quote-unquote band, Why Music? And the woman who wrote this piece, Annie Clark, is actually much more well-known as St. Vincent, and she's been touring with David Byrne as a pop act. So there's some crossover going on there. Then we're going to perform a work that was written for an ensemble of violas, and the viola is actually kind of the feature of this concert, so Judd Greenstein's piece for violas is really appropriate to kind of shift the mode over to viola. And then we'll finish the first half with a concerto for small mixed ensemble and viola that was written for Nadia by an Icelandic composer named Daniel Bjarnason. And in the second half of the program, then finally we get to the largest piece, which is not yet a full orchestra, but it's Brahms' Second Serenade, which does not have any violins. The violas take the lead. So this is a real viola feature, but also it's a chance to go from a chamber music setting, or almost kind of like a classical band, through the viola ensemble, the concerto ensemble, and then the Brahms serenade for an unusual version of the traditional orchestra setup.
Well, tell us about your early April show.
We're going to be doing another concert which features newer music. In fact, this concert will feature the first performance of a new piece by Brooke Joyce. Brooke is currently on faculty at Luther, and he's writing this piece for his colleague from Luther, who is also our principal oboe player, Heather Armstrong. This is really neat to get to develop a new piece with a composer who's in the area, with one of our own soloists, and should be very interesting work. It's going to involve the screen, and it's based on architectural drawings by a French artist and architect named Robert Mallet Stevens, and these beautiful kind of Art Deco drawings that he did are the inspiration for the work. So those will be featured in this. All the pieces on the program, though, have some reference to physical space, the way the sound is constructed. So we open the concert with music by Gabrielli, which will be coming from everywhere. You know, Gabrielli, when he wrote these pieces for the St. Mark's Basilica in Venice, he had these antiphonal choirs echoing one another in different spots to take advantage of this glorious space. So we'll do that in the Gallagher. And then on the second half, we'll be performing Mahler's First Symphony. And that's a work that really is soaked in the landscape in which he spent much of his life writing his music. You know, he wrote his music in a cottage in the summers in the middle of the Austrian Alps. Even in the Mahler, with something like the offstage trumpets, the really famous offstage trumpet calls, by performing music like that, it kind of changes the dynamic of the concert hall. But when sound starts coming from somewhere else, so you feel that there's more dimension to the sound than just what's happening on stage, it really kind of opens up a sense of what music can be. And Mahler was one of the first to really take advantage of that, using offstage trumpets and effects like that, or cowbells, you know, sounds that just don't seem like they belong on the stage. So this will really put the spotlight on that aspect of his work.
And then you're going to have a contest for your last concert. Tell us about this.
It is sort of a contest. This is a neat concert. In this case, we do have a framework for this, which is that we're going to be presenting a symphony. But it's an imaginary symphony because we're taking four different movements from four different pieces and putting them into the proper place in our imaginary symphony. And we'll be presenting this as one work with movements of four different composers. We open with the first movement of Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, followed by the second movement of Shostakovich's Tenth Symphony. That'll be followed by the second movement of Scheherazade by Rimsky-Korsakov. And then the program will finish with the last section of The Firebird by Stravinsky. We're also going to be celebrating the kickoff to our 85th anniversary, and the audience is going to be able to choose one of these works. Plus, we'll be able to choose from an unnamed encore. It will not be announced until the concert. It's going to be a piece I think people are very excited about, too. So one of those five pieces will appear in its entirety on our following season. And we're going to ask the audience to tell us which one they want to hear at that concert. So that will not only wrap up this very exciting season that's coming up, but it will also be the kickoff for our 85th anniversary season in the 14-15 artistic year. So all in all, a nice way to wrap up the year.
The Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony's music director and conductor, Jason Weinberger. Jason says the orchestra will also be offering many outreach educational programs throughout the season and presenting a family holiday show on December 14th featuring the Snowman film. For more information and details about tickets, please go to wcfsymphony.org. You're listening to the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. Today's Iowa Art Showcase broadcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Thanks for this program goes to Katie Wingert, David Baum, Brooke Joyce, Sarah Compton, Mark North, and Jason Weinberger. Production thanks goes to Iowa Public Radio's production assistant Tony Daner and IPR's technical producer Phil Moss. Thanks for this show also goes to Iowa Public Radio's Eric Jordan, Jason Burns, Garrett Van Leeuwen, and Cooper Holmeyer. Program research was provided by IPR's Nick Carlo. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. Thanks for joining us. For more information on Iowa Public Radio's programming schedule and Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, please visit our website at iowapublicradio.org.